Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today, and our topic today is going to be the big idea, the data, the execution, and I'm delighted to introduce our leading lady today, Jill Gwaltney, and she is the founder of Rauxa. And what I'm excited about is we're going to talk about marketing and digital marketing, all things, but first of all, Jill, say hello to our listeners throughout the U.S.
Hello, listeners. I'm excited to be here.
I love when people go, oh, hello, everyone. It's so hard to say everyone. But, you know, it's a good thing because we have a lot of very dedicated listeners and people who want to hear about everything business. And what I love is you guys are predominantly female-led as a leadership in an organization. Is that right? We love hearing that.
That is right. And we have, for instance, we just hired a chief creative officer out of our New York office, and only 11% of agencies have chief creative officers that are women. So we are excited to have her join. Her name is Kate Daggett. She's fantastic.
Awesome. Well, you know, and we're going to get into this whole big data and how you, at least what you've shared with me, is how you leverage data for your marketing execution and results. And, you know, first of all, from a history standpoint, you have been around quite a while and grown as the founder of this company to six different offices throughout the U.S. since 1999. Tell us a little bit about your history here and growth as an organization.
So I worked with my father for 20 years in the direct mail printing business. It was a fantastic experience. He taught me a ton, which I leveraged in starting Rauxa. And we sold it to a publicly held company out of Chicago, and I had a contract to keep running it for a while, so I did that. And then I thought I might retire. Then I coached my son's soccer team. I also went to Ladies Golf Day, played some of that, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm losing a sense of myself. I need to get a job. I always say my family kicked me out and said, Mom, you need a job. So I really started Rauxa very small. There were just four of us, and we started doing direct marketing, creative, and production. And I thought maybe I'd do this kind of part-time, and so I'd still have family time. But all of my friends laugh at that because they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, we knew you would be a hard driver. And there's really two things that drive me. One, I'm incredibly competitive and love meeting
nice.
The boys. Super fun. And the other thing is I truly like to figure out how to help people. So we started doing creative and production for direct mail, but soon into it, it was like, oh, my gosh, what people really need help with is targeting. And who do I target and how often? And that's how we got into the data side. So I like to say that we were big into data before data was big because it became such a big part of our offering when we were exclusively doing direct mail.
Well, and obviously that leads to 20,000 questions, and I'll start with one. And, you know, what I love is when you start talking about data and driving results, but data, a data-driven marketing firm, I don't hear marketing firms say that as much. So what does data-driven marketing firm mean where you are taking data and you're leveraging it? What does that mean to, let's say, a business owner or someone that's looking for, obviously, a better way to get results and outreach or obviously prospecting and people raising their hand to say, I'd like to know more about what you do or buy online or whatever that is?
Sure. So in the world of direct mail, because we were early into the whole data area, we started with figuring out, okay, what are the correct data sources to help people figure out who is the right prospect to go after? How do I leverage my dollars most cost effectively? And so that's where it all began. And then from there, it went into the digital world, and then data became real time. So basically mm-hmm. what we help our customers do is how do you collect it, how do you analyze it, and how do you leverage it in your marketing campaigns. And I am a big believer, I don't like fluff. I'm sort of a non-BS kind of a woman. I like to be able to tell people, this is what you invested, this is right, this is what we spent, this is what you got, this is how we tested and learned how to optimize it and take it so it's even more effective and efficient. And data allows you to do that. And it helps you get that, now that 360-degree view of your customers and prospects. So not only when they're in the prospect phase, but as they become customers. And it's interesting because consumers are willing to share relevant data points as long as you can give them useful information. And now they're expecting it.
Because they want you to be smarter when you're marketing to them with a message that's going to resonate with them, right?
Exactly. Don't waste my time talking to me about stuff that doesn't interest me.
Well, and that, you know, it's interesting, at least with business owners I see, is business owners, you know, middle-sized enterprises, even small enterprises, you know, when you talk about collecting and then analyzing data, the collecting part is what's always fascinating to me, and that equals, you know, how businesses manage or have their database or their CRM. And do you find that that is a big old mess? Do you find businesses are getting more and more sophisticated with it? Is that where a lot of your, you know, collecting information comes from, or are people buying big lists from you with data that has kind of the propensities of consumer-based demographics, and then you do all what you do with content delivery? Give us an idea of how you walk us through, like, a client and maybe a project that you worked on. If you can't say their name, I got it. But let's hear how you, you know, kind of go through and collect, analyze, and leverage. I'm dying to know.
So for one of our larger Fortune 500 customers, and those are all great questions, by the way, we don't build the database ourselves or hold the data ourselves. It'll either be held at the client because of privacy reasons, or it mm-hmm. could be held at a third party. And so it starts with the list sources, right? What are all the places to get names of either residences or email, opt-in emails? And so the work begins with researching that. What are the best data sources? The widest net you can start with, the better off. And then we might take those data sources and do segmentation or modeling to figure out which are the best of these targets that are most likely going to accept whatever our customer is offering. And then you start to test other things, like in what channels and at what frequency and in what combination of channels. And then at the end of the day, how do we attribute those results, right? Did it come from the TV? Did it come from the market, from the mail? Did it come from the email? What combination of channels make the most efficient marketing or drive the most efficient marketing results? And so, yes,
I love that. And go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir. You're on a thought.
Oh, no worries. Everyone needs help with it. So a lot of times organizations are embarrassed because they're not where they need to be, but we tell them, listen, mm-hmm. everybody needs help with this. Because the other thing people are talking about is this highly personalized communications. And you think about it, it starts with Amazon. If you go on and you make a purchase, they're always making other recommendations. Well, now 35% of their revenue comes from those recommendations that they're making.
So more questions, and I love this because I'm thinking, do you only work with large companies? Tell us a little bit about, because I know you've worked with, oh my gosh, Verizon, you know, you've done business with Blue Shield of California, Allergan, Alaska Airlines. I mean, these are not small firms. Do you pretty much specialize in really large institutions and organizations?
Mid to large size. They need to at least have the budget and the wherewithal so that we can put together the proper tools for larger campaigns. So it's a lot of direct-to-consumer, it's some B2B, but either way, they need to be big enough to have certain marketing dollars to be able to achieve what it is that we have to offer.
Well, and that, you know, I guess that leads to, too, if you're recommending campaigns for businesses, so once you kind of collect the quote-unquote data, you know, and then I know you mentioned that you kind of get into testing what channels, is the channel part where you recommend, obviously, like maybe Facebook advertising and then other types of advertising online, but you also talk about creative content. So what are some of the different creative or channels that you do things for with your bigger clients?
So, yes, it's definitely email. Email is a great workhorse, and still some direct mail for certain segments of the population, but also display, and from display, there's a lot of work around social, and now the latest key words that the team has been throwing around is dark social, and then producing
dark
content.
Social? Is that
dark
the term
social.
Now? I haven't heard that.
I know. So that's for all the non-obvious channels. So when you're sharing with your friends, you're not always doing that on Twitter or on Facebook, right? It could be in Snapchat. It could be you're emailing information to them and you're just copying and paste it. So how do you get consumers to share what it is that you want them to share? And the other thing that our clients are dying for is content and video content. Mm-hmm. So that is why we started a video content agency called Cats on the Roof in Los Angeles, where they specialize in branded video content for digital and social.
You know, video is so hot right now, and I'm kind of curious. It's like, are you seeing that people are super excited about that, or is there just total confusion on how video marketing and vlogging and all of that can work? Because that is, those are great terms, and I know we're looking at that as a small business, but you know, how exciting is it for people, or is it still kind of the early adopters now that are looking at video marketing? Because I think it's awesome and there's so much going on with video.
It is very exciting and everybody's into it. They can't keep up with the amount of content. And the other thing, we have a great group of creatives and storytellers in this little super flexible, nimble video shop. You can imagine these young creative guys. And so what they've educated me in is you can't just take a TV commercial and cut it down and throw it into social. People aren't going to watch it. So even if we're doing video where we're explaining a Mileage Plus program or explaining how to use a website, that has to be entertaining and engaging along with educational. So coming up with the right kind of content at the right length for some of these brands and in these different social channels, like what's on Instagram versus Twitter versus Facebook, varies, and the strategy behind it, it's just it's a lot of fun.
Do you find, I mean, is the process, like I think for so many of us, I'm going to put myself in the old bucket here, but, you know, from an old-fashioned perspective, you think of ad agencies that go through the whole creative process and, you know, you'd recommend where you'd advertise and what the campaign would be and the billboards and all that kind of stuff. Is the process the same, you know, when you're looking at digital marketing, you know, because it's a similar process, even though you have different channels that you're making these marketing messages, because you're sharing information in such a different way now, right? Because you want people to share and read and pay attention as opposed to look at a quick advertisement and move on, because it's the call to action, I think. But how is it different? You've been in the business so long. Is it different, you know, looking at digital marketing?
Well, yes and no, in a sense that we start with, okay, when we sit down with a client and figure out, okay, what are you trying to achieve, right? What are you trying to get? What are you trying to get to? And then we dig in. This is a big lesson from my father about digging in. We dig in and do the work. So what's the competitive marketplace? What are the benefits and the strengths of the brand that we're doing the work for? What have they done in the past? What's worked? What hasn't worked? And then based on their budgets and what they're trying to achieve, we'll design a campaign that always includes some sort of testing strategy. Now, the fun thing is our Cats on the Roof guys over here on the side are a small, nimble group. Then we might say, hey, there's a place for video in social. And they're the ones that come up with what should it be, how long should it be, hey, here are some different concepts. And because it's just a handful of people that do everything from the creative to the production to the editing to the final delivery, they get it done quickly and for a reasonable cost. And so they can be a very important part of the campaign, but we don't like to mess with them. We want them to have the freedom to come up with what they think the different segments are going to find engaging, and they're just great storytellers.
You know, what's funny to me is, like, because I can tell you love what you do, because it's like you just hear the lilt in your voice when you talk about the campaigns that you're doing for clients and what they can do with this video, which is very charming, I want you to know. And I'm dying to know, because I asked 20 questions at once, and I apologize for that. But, I mean, for you, it's like, what you know, when you see these clients and you're, do you love the creative process the most? Do you love just the end results with your clients and the relationships? I mean, what floats your boat the most, knowing you love what you do? That's clearly apparent, but what do you love the most in, you know, working in this industry with this business and what you're accomplishing for companies in reaching their market?
You know, I love the relationships, not only with the clients, but with the other employees. And this is where I think women have a real advantage, is opening up and being vulnerable and really understanding what people need and getting behind all of it, not only to make them successful in their job, but in their life, and to actually mm-hmm. care about them. This is not a job. I'm not trying to just sell you something. I really care about you, and I want this to work out well. And we're so determined about it, and that gets me excited. And then also the mentoring of all the talented young women we have at Roxa. I hired a woman out of college 15 years ago to be my assistant receptionist, and she's now CEO of the organization. And it's been so much fun to see that talented young woman who I've taught everything that I know and now knows more than me, right? And it's now it's her turn to lead the organization. I find that incredibly rewarding. So it's the clients and it's the people at work. I look forward to going to work, and I look forward to solving problems with them, and I look forward to helping people.
Corny's good. You know what I mean? I love corny. But, you know, what's been most surprising to you along the journey? You know, the growth and, you know, either inspirational or frustrating, but what has been the biggest surprise to you as you've grown, you know, your business venture? I mean, you've been around since 99. Obviously, there's probably tons of lessons learned, but any kind of, like, you know, situation, you know, result that kind of comes to you that says, oh, this was, like, such a surprise to us. I didn't see that coming. Both, you know, from a good place and also maybe a learning lesson you can share with some of our listeners who are entrepreneurs.
Well, when I started Roxa, I had no idea that we'd be 230 employees with six offices across the country, like you mentioned. But I always wanted to make sure that we were doing the best job for clients and delivering excellent work. So on the one hand, I'm surprised we are. I'll walk around my New York office, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, all these people work at Roxa. But then on the other hand, I'm like, well, no wonder. We do really good work for people, and we really care about them. And at the end of the day, we deliver results. I would say probably because I've had people say, what is the biggest thing you've screwed up? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, because I've messed up so many different things. And I love to tell young people, you just have to have the heart to say, whoops, this wasn't the right thing, right? Don't bury your head in the sand. Immediately recognize it and come up with an action plan. And we made one acquisition of a technology firm that was a bit of a disaster, cultural fit. And it's like, oh, boy, I learned from that. But I remember when we made the acquisition, I was like, okay, this is our first acquisition. First and the only one we've done to date. I'm not going to bet the farm on it, but I'm going to see how we do it and see how I can do it better next time and maybe what better help I can get for the integration. But that was pretty much a flop. And yet, you know, we've carried on and built that technology side of our business anyway.
I love how you're talking about that because I go, you know, I could see you walking around New York and you're like, holy cow, look, we have 230 employees. And then it's like the other side of your head is going, holy cow, I have 230 employees, the scare factor, right? Because that's
exactly
a lot of managing it, right? Oh,
exactly.
Reality bites sometimes. But I love that. I mean, and where do you see the future of Roxa? Because business has changed so much. I mean, tell me a little bit about that, because just even in the last 5 years, right, Jill? Because it's so different now with social media, and I kind of call it the traditional way business was done. But do you agree with that? Do you think that business really has changed? It's so different in the last few years? Or what's your take on that with the companies you're working with?
I 100% agree. You know, it's interesting. It's one of the reasons that I love the printing business with my dad, but I was glad we sold it when we did because it was so capital intensive. Right,
mm-hmm.
You have to order those $3 million presses years ahead, and you have to make sure that they're running and they're busy with backlog, you know, 5 days a week, 2 shifts minimum. And so you're sort of handcuffed by that. And the thing I loved about Roxa and starting this agency is we are very nimble, and we can figure out what's next. And technology has had a huge impact in mobile on how brands reach consumers. And I think that's what's so fun for us and so fun for me. I have a lot of young people educating me every day in the organization about things like dark social or whatever's new and around the corner. And I love that we're learning and that we have these resources to solve problems for customers. And it's going to continue to evolve. So we need to keep that, hey, ever learning kind of attitude in our business, which I think we really do. And that's also kind of part of our culture. We love feedback. We're not afraid to take things on because we always want to grow and make it better.
Right. And you've been around for a while. It's like how did you change your business model, or did you, with everything that happened post 2008? Which, you know, for a lot of companies, I don't know any of us in business that weren't impacted, you know, post 2008 or during 2008. I've known colleagues of mine who closed businesses, colleagues of mine who changed their whole business model. Did, you know, anything after 2008 change for how you did business? I mean, did you scale back? Did you find you had to, you know, do things in a different way? Or can you share a little bit on that one of what did you do? Is that when you became more nimble?
Sure.
Or did you just ride the lucky pony that you had nothing impact you at that point?
Well, all businesses have ups and downs. Right? I mean, it's fun when everything seems like it's on the upswing. We didn't have a lot of financial clients, so we did actually have Washington, when I say that, thinking back now, Washington Mutual was a big client of ours, and of course they were gone in a heartbeat. So that was a little painful. So you have to react, and maybe you have to scale back and live to fight another day. But one of the things, too, that my dad taught me is be disciplined about the numbers. And Rox has made money every year that we've been in business. But we look at it every month, and we make sure that we're in a good place, right, that expenses. I remember I was a little girl. I asked my dad, what's the definition of rich? And he said, spending less than you make.
So, I love that answer. Your dad is wise, girl. We need those. I love that.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. So you got to be disciplined about the numbers.
You know, it's interesting. I will tell you one thing I hear from women, you know, because again, I hang in that pond all day long, is a lot from female founders is they'll say, you know, my business changed when I really started to pay attention to the numbers in a different way. What I love that you said earlier was you said we're nimble, because I do think business is changing at such a quick rate right now. Companies and small businesses, middle market, whatever, even if you work for an organization, you've got to be willing to be nimble and change, because it is changing so much. And technology is a key piece of it, not to fear it, but to try to tap into it and then see how you can maximize it. So sounds like you're on the right track, and that's a good thing. I'm kind of curious for you what the future looks like for digital marketing. I mean, what do you see as kind of a broad, you know, trend standpoint for people that, you know, are thinking of doing more content sharing? Obviously, video is huge, but give us kind of the, you know, the 411 on what you see as the future picture of your industry and what you do for businesses.
I think more and more it's going to be around mobile and also around personalization, that you're giving me the right message wherever I am at the right time, right, through the right channel, whether it's through a push notification, through an app or an email, or it's just going to get more and more where it's relevant and it's right handy there on your phone, and it's what you want to hear about.
I love it. If we have owners and companies, what would be some of the recommendations with this new video marketing and video content that you're driving? What are maybe a couple of tips or things that you could share just for other business owners that are listening, for our audience, that would help them if they're considering doing more video marketing?
Well, sometimes we're like the cobbler in a sense that, you know, the cobbler's kids have no shoes and we fall behind a little bit in doing work about our own self, right?
Right,
but I would say, you know, it's good to establish a brand. Who are you as a company, and what differentiates you, and what's your story? And then once you have that story figured out, it's a good idea to spread the word through social channels, and you might be able to do some quick videos that help explain what the products are or the benefits, or just a fun story about your organization that fits with your brand. It just depends on your budget and your goals and where you're headed.
And do you, for what you see as far as people doing video, because you, now this company in LA, this is a partner with you, or is this an additional piece to Roxa for what you're doing with the video?
It's a division. We just like to keep them separate so that we don't slow them down or make them boring.
Well, I'm curious, how do you keep up on all this? What do you do that kind of keeps you up to date on the latest and greatest that's happening in your industry? Do you belong to a lot of industry associations, or do you hire more cutting edge, right, up to speed people? But, you know, what do you do to kind of keep yourself up to snuff on what's the latest and greatest for what you do in business?
You know, hiring is very important, and we have some really strong leaders in strategy and media and research and technology. So you're right, a lot of what I learn is from them and articles that they might share. I mean, every day I'm reading about new things or learning about new things. But then I do really rely on the experts within my organization to come up with the recommendations. And like I said, Gina is really leading now the strategy and the vision for the organization, so I like to let her do that. I don't really belong to associations necessarily. I used to belong to YPO back in the day, but more I rely on the internal folks and just the information, too, that we get from clients on what their new challenges are and what they're hearing about. We're constantly collaborating.
Yeah, first of all, and YPO, Young Presidents Organization, right? Just so all our listeners have what YPO is, correct?
Right.
Is that what you were referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, got it. Yes. I mean, and for you, it's like, you've got this amazing team and all these people. I mean, what is next for you? I mean, do you just want to continue to keep building your kingdom, or what do you see as just kind of your future focus as the founder and somebody with, you know, that's obviously built an incredible kingdom, but what's next for you, if I could ask that and you can share?
Oh, sure. I love this founder job. It is a lot of fun. Gene is doing such a great job leading the day-to-day and then brings me in for key client meetings, strategies, specific mentoring opportunities. She'll come to me and ask for some coaching around certain opportunities / problems, you know, / hair on fire. And and I really enjoy that. And I'm not so much, you know, in the day-to-day. And that's fun for me, too, because I'm getting to do everything that I love, which is helping with senior level clients figure out whatever it is they need to get done.
Very cool. It sounds like you're a great nurturer and mentor, you know, to the people on your team. Do you feel mentoring has been a key thing for you in helping and advising and guiding?
Yes, I'm trying, and I work on it too, because I've had a tendency in the past to be too critical. So I'm like, okay, now, wait a minute. Is this really relevant information that's going to help them, or is this me being critical? So the delivery is also important, and I'm a big believer in real-time feedback, sort of the Oreo approach. Hey, this is what was right, but this is maybe what you can work on, and then finish with, but this is how much I appreciate whatever it is you're doing for whatever reason. My dad used to say genuine compliments work so well it's almost like cheating. And the key...
He's got some gems.
Yeah, the key is the genuine part. When you genuinely care about people, there are so many people want to know, how am I doing? What's next for me? How do I do it better? So I find that that's a lot of fun.
I think an homage to your father, if he has gems like that, you should package up some of those wise advice tips and put them in a book. That's my thought. Or at least put a video together with that, you know?
I've had a couple people, because I'm always dropping things my dad taught me, comments, and they said, oh my gosh, I have to read a book. And if you have time, just one brief story about him.
Sure.
When I first started selling printing, I was 22 years old. You know, there were no women buyers, no women salespeople. And I was out pounding the streets, and I got my first opportunity, big opportunity. It was printing statements for Avco Financial in Newport Beach. And I was filling out my spec sheet in the plant, and he came up to me and he said, oh, where do they process those statements? Well, I'm not sure, Dad. And he said, well, where are you delivering them? I said, oh, town mailing. He said, good, let's go down and see how they process them. I was like, Dad, I don't even know if they'll let us in. And he said, well, we'll find out when we get there, won't we? And so we drove down there, and sure enough, they let us in, and they were having all kinds of trouble with the paper they were using. So instead of just turning in the bid like everyone else, we printed samples on different paper and ran them down to the mailer and reduced our spoilage 50%. And there was two big takeaways for me from that. One is dig in. Do more than what's expected. And two, be bold. Go for it. You don't know. And show up. That was three. But we're old-fashioned that way. We show up at our clients a lot. You just get a lot from being there in person.
That is, seriously, I'm applauding you right now. I'm going, that is awesome to leave on. But, you know, and we're done with our show. One question I've got for you, Jill. If people want to reach out to you, if they've got more questions, how would you like people to contact you? Can you share either on your website or phone number or email or whatever you would like for people to reach out if they've got more questions in our listening audience?
Sure. They can reach out to my email, which is jgwaltney@roxa.com.
One more time, J, and it's J.
Jay Gwaltney.
G-W-A-L-T-N-E-Y, right?
Correct.
At Roxa. And then Roxa. And that's
R-A-U-X-A.
Awesome. And just thank you. This was such great advice. And seriously, you got to package a book with those fundamental things your dad shared, because I think those are priceless and timeless.
No,
and that's what's so great about those. But you are awesome to be our leading lady. I want to thank all of our listeners. We love doing our show every Friday at 2 p.m. and Mondays at 9 a.m. And I'm delighted to say that next week our leading lady is going to be Margaret Grossman, who's the retired editor-in-chief of Executive Publications. And our topic will be real-life lessons from a curvy climb up the publishing industry. So to our listeners, we love that you listen in. Have a great weekend. And one thing we always, always want to ask of you is if you are in a role where you serve and support women, try to help the next one in line. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.